So, okay, so from last day, we were looking at the following situation. We have this object here, which I gave the abridged definition that this should be given by Zariski cohomology. Now, X here, as you probably remember, is smooth projective, so I won't bother writing that down. Perhaps I should remind you that D is the dimension of X, because we will need that. So this is R minus M, the R minimum K theory sheath of this. And we're looking at a cycle class map, which I did not define, but I'll illustrate in examples, to the 2R minus AMP, the lean cohomology of X with coefficients in a subring of A of the real numbers. So if you recall from last day, this right-hand side is really a very transcendental cohomology theory. And the definition of it is that you take the 2R minus AMP hypercohomology of a particular complex, let's call it the lean complex here. And the Deligne complex is given as follows. So first of all, you look at A of R. Now A of R, as you remember, this is 2 pi I to the power R times A. And then you map this into what I call omega bullet less than R of X. This is a holomorphic complex, sheath complex of forms. And the omega bullet less than R on X is simply given by this object here, this complex. So now, this complex with a zero in front naturally becomes a subcomplex of this. It's just in this last part here. So I can write this in the following form. To insert the zero, I insert what I call minus one. That's the notation for inserting a zero in the first part. And then we map this into the Deligne complex here. And what's left is just the complex, which is just a single constant sheath AR with just a string of zeros to the right. So then what you do is now is you take the hypercohomology of this short exact sequence, and that will give you a long exact sequence. So you can write that out. And so if you take the H 2R minus M hypercohomology, okay, to get the Deligne cohomology, this is what you have. So you have the Deligne cohomology here. And then you're mapping to what? H, the ordinary cohomology now. This, okay? And then you take the height, the 2R minus M plus 1 hypercohomology of this. But you got to shift by minus 1, okay, when you do that. So that's just going to go to QR minus M plus 1 minus 1 of omega X bullet less than R, okay, and you keep going. And, of course, you have something to the left, okay, same idea. So to the left of this, because of this shift, okay, this is going to be, you know, this situation here, okay, and then you have, of course, sitting in before that is going to be H 2R minus M, ordinary cohomology A of R. And of course, stuff to the left as well. So now, you recall from last day that, well, first of all, let's just look at what we have here. If you take the complex of forms of degree at least R, so you have a string of zeros and you hit that complex beginning with omega R, that's going to be a subcomplex of this complex here, then the co-kernel is precisely omega bullet less than R X. But you recall from last day that the hypercohomology of this complex here is just a Hodge filtration. And this is the cobalt complex cohomology itself. So what that tells you here is that you end up with the following. You have, well, the ARF Hodge filtration of X, this, okay, is the same thing as HI, the hypercohomology of this complex. So that's the import of what I said last day when I was talking about hypercohomology. So that means that the hypercohomology of this injects into here because this is just the complete complex cohomology. And so the upshot of that is if you take the ith hypercohomology of omega bullet less than R of X, what is that equal to? Well, that's equal to the ith complex cohomology modulo the Hodge filter. That's what it is. Okay? So then we can rewrite this whole thing. So we end up with the following. You have H2R minus M X A of R here. You have this. And now what you have here is you're looking at the kernel, okay, of this map into here. That's what this has in common with the FR H2R minus M of XC. So we can just write that as this intersects with H2R minus M of X A of R. Okay. And what about the left-hand side? Well, it's something similar. I mean, it's going to be a torus sort of thing. So this is going to be H2R minus M of XC modulo 2M minus 1, okay, modulo FR H2R minus M minus 1 of XC plus what? Well, this should be, sorry, this should be a minus 1 here, okay? Jeez. Plus H2R minus M minus 1 of X A bar. So, you have a short exact sequence. This is what we have. Okay, so let's look at an example situation here. Call example 1 here. Okay. So, in example 1 here, I'm going to set A to be the integers. So in that case, what we have here is we put J of R M of X to be this left-hand term. I'm going to abbreviate this a bit. I won't bother writing out all the terminology of the FR, okay, and then plus this part here, plus H 2r minus m minus 1 of x z of r. Now, you may recall in my first lecture that this can be described in terms of duality, Poincaré and Serre duality. And that's key to the description of this, at least in terms of a formula for the map I have here, is key to understanding this in terms of duality. So this is going to be the following. Remember that d is a dimension of x. It's d minus r plus 1, and that's going to be h 2d minus 2r plus m plus 1 of xc. It's the dual space of this, modulo the Poincaré dual of this part here, which amounts to what is called a lattice of periods. Now, if one follows the convention of twist, this is the sort of situation it is. It's done by integration. You're integrating forms over cycles, and that gives you this image lying inside here. Okay, so that's when A is the integers, and now remember, we have a map, as I mentioned before, as I stated, from CHR of XM into here, okay? So what I want to do is I want to consider the composite, which goes over here. So I will call this lambda Rm, okay? And so I'll simply say the following. In the case where A is the integers, which is mainly what I'm interested in focusing on for the moment, we have that the kernel of lambda Rm, this is, can be taken to be the definition of the null homologous cycles, Harry cycles. So then what you have here, is an induced map, which we call the Abel-Jacobi mapping, which goes from the null homologous cycles, these Harry cycles, to a Jacobian. Okay, so that's what we call the Abel-Jacobi mapping. There's another perhaps important bit of information here, and that is that in the case that M is at least 1, this intersection here can be at most torsion. In other words, the R is too big in order to capture a class and its conjugate. So torsion can occur when A is the integers. But when A is the field, it is just zero. So I should mention here again, when M is bigger than or equal to 1, one can show then FR H 2R minus M of X C intersect with H 2R minus M of X Z of R is just the torsion subgroup of cohomology. All right. And perhaps one more thing here, just so that I'll just say this as well. Suppose that M is 0, okay? And let us suppose, that M is 0 and A is, for example, Q. In this case, we have the cycle map called lambda R, 0, and I'm going to put a Q up top here, okay, indicating now I'm going to tensor things with Q. This would be CHR X0 tensor Q. Now, this is just your ordinary Chow group tensored with Q, okay? And where does this go? Well, this goes to FR H2R of XC intersects H2R of X integers, or XQ. So this goes essentially to the so-called Hodge group of X, Q coefficients. So this is precisely, I'll write it in this form. These are essentially the rational classes of Hodge type RR. And the celebrated Hodge conjecture says that this is always surjective. So the Hodge conjecture here is a surjectivity in the case when M is equal to zero. Okay, one more example situation is when the case A is the reals. So perhaps just a simple remark here, which builds on what I said here, if A is a field, and M is at least one, as I mentioned before, this part here vanishes. It's the worst torsion, but if A is a field, there's no torsion, right? So if A is a field and M is at least one, then H2R minus M of X A of R is simply isomorphic to this. Okay, so this, let me put a subscript A here. So that's what it'll be. So the next example here that I'm interested in is suppose that we'll assume that M is at least one, and let us consider the case that A is equal to R. Okay? So let's look at this term here. Okay, when A is equal to R. So the first thing is that the complex numbers splits into real isomorphism into this. So then you can take a projection to R minus 1. So think of this as splitting into two parts. And one of those parts gets canceled with one of them below, okay, in the case that A is equal to the reals, okay. So from this point of view, you can establish an isomorphism, which goes from J, R, M, R of X, where now you only project onto these coefficients here. That projection will kill anything involving the R twist. So in other words, this will give you H2R minus M minus 1 of X, R of R minus 1, modulo pi r minus 1 of fr h2r minus m minus 1 of xc. So One very simple example here is when m is 1. So when m equals 1, we have the following. We have h 2r minus 1 ln of x r of r. Well, that can be identified with jr1 r of x. Well, this can be identified with, if you're removing all the r parts, what this essentially looks like is the following. These are real forms of type r minus 1, r minus 1 that are twisted by r minus 1. And from the duality mechanism which I explained earlier, the Poincaré seroduality, well, in this case the seroduality, this can be identified with the following, h d minus r plus 1, d minus r plus 1 of x. If you make a point of recording the twist properly, this is what the twist does become, and essentially you take the dual space of that. So that gives you now an explicit description of the Deligne cohomologies in this case. Okay, so now we want to get into some examples of cohomology. So what I want to do is to how this works for Clavial. And so pull this down here. So we just need a couple more ideas before I do this. So what I want to do, first of all, is focus on the case that m is 0. Okay? So when m is 0, we have this map, chr of x. I won't bother throwing in 0 now. And now this goes to Deligne cohomology. And on the left-hand side, there's a torus, which essentially is a Griffith Jacobian. And on the right-hand side, I'll simply write it in the form hr r of x g of r. Okay, so these are integral classes of type rr. So now, I'm going to consider a class lying inside here. Okay? Now, suppose, and remember this is isomorphic, well, this is identified with h2r minus 1 of xc modulo the Hodge filter. Let me put an isomorphism here because I'm going to, for the moment, just sort of eliminate the twist because they're just going to complicate things a little bit. Let me just write it in this form here, so the z doesn't have a twist, okay? So I'll explain the isomorphism. And as I mentioned before, this is the same thing as f d minus r plus 1 h 2d minus 2r plus 1 of x z. We take the dual space of this modulo h 2d minus 2r plus 1 of x z. Okay? So we have this. So now, suppose note here that you have the Abel-Jacobi mapping, which now goes from c CHR HOM of X here to JR 0 of X. Okay? So now, if C actually belongs to the cycles that are null homologous to 0, then the Alba-Jacobi mapping, or the map that goes into here, is given by a straightforward membrane integral. So what does that tell us in this case? Well, that implies that there exists a real, I mean, dimension of this is going to be d minus r, so there's going to be a real 2d minus 2r plus 1 chain, which I'll call zeta, okay, such that boundary of zeta is equal to C. So C bounds a chain. So the Alba-Jacobi mapping is given as follows. So if we take an omega line inside here, then the Alba-Jacobi value of C acting on omega is simply given by the integral omega over zeta, and this is going to be well-defined mod periods. So that gives us the map that we're looking for in this case. Okay. So, let's muddy the water a little bit by not necessarily assuming that C is in here, okay? So what I'm going to do here is, let us assume only that C belongs to here. But with the added property that for any smooth hyperplane section, I'll say hyperplane section, so I'm fixing a given polarization, y contained in x, we have that C restricted to y belongs to the null homologous cycles on y. Okay, so it's a primitive kind of class. That's really what we're saying in this case. So then you could look at the following. So here you have CHR of XM, or X I should say. You have this class C. It maps into the Lean cohomology. Mind you, I'm going to still call this map lambda r 0, okay? So we have this class C, and then what we can do is we can restrict this. This is going to be JR 0 of X here, JR 0 of Y. So the point is that this goes to 0 over here. All right? So it lands in here. Lands in this Jacobian. So, if we consider a family now of such y's, so let me call it y t, t belonging to f, okay? A family of such smooth y's, what does that tell us? Well, we end up with a variational map I'll call it mu of c, which goes from f j of r 0 y t. This is called a normal function. So we have a normal function here. The topological invariant of that normal function, well, lambda r 0 of c, which is the value of c lying inside here, we sometimes use this notation here, is called the topological invariant of the normal function mu of c. It's actually known to depend only on the normal function, even though it's given by an explicit value here. Okay, so let me give you an application to Calabi-Yau. So in this case, this is due to Phil Griffiths. Griffiths' famous example. Suppose that x is given by the Fermat quintic. Okay. That's not Calabi-Yau. Calm down. Calm down. So, let L1 be zero set. It's going to be a linear. It's going to be a P2 lying inside lies inside x, okay? That's a P2. Here's another P2. Oh, let me call this mu z2 z2 plus mu z3 z4 plus z5. This is contained in x. Here, mu is a primitive root of unity, okay? And L3 is a zero set. Maybe z1. Homework. Okay? First thing is that this is non-zero. Okay? This is non-zero, so that means that put C to be L1 minus L2, okay, that belongs to CH2 of X. Okay. Now here's where the Clavius picture comes in. We're going to let y of t be a general tensor, just simply a family of hyperplane sections of x. Okay, these are Clavius, right? So that implies you get an induced normal function. Now, of course, I won't bother what happens to say what happens when xt is singular, but there's a Hodge theory involved in that. And we don't even have to go as far as all of P1. We can just restrict ourselves to the smooth parts, and that's fine. So this is, if you do it correctly, this will be J20 of y of t. Okay? So we have this. And we have that the topological invariant of this normal function is equal to the class of C, which is not equal to zero. So we have it, this has a non-trivial topological invariant. Now, here's another fact which comes from monodromy representation theory type arguments. So we'll assume that YT is smooth, and we're going to look at, recall that the cycles that are algebraically equivalent to zero in YT are certainly contained inside the cycles that are homologous to zero on YT. Okay? And in fact, it turns out that for essentially general t, that the Abel-Jacobi value of CH alg is equal to zero. I don't have time to explain all this, but it follows from some monodromy type arguments. So in that case, that induces a map which I'll call AJ bar from the Griffiths group to J20 Y of t. Okay? For general t. So the basic story here is that because the topological invariant here is non-zero, okay, this has to be non-trivial for general t. So this contains an infinite cyclic subgroup. Well, it turns out, and it's better that I say this verbally than try and write it down, that for a general Clapeyau variety, threefold, a general Clapeyau, the Griffith group is not only non-trivial in this sense, but in fact is infinite dimensional over Q. And let me follow through by saying the following. If you look at threefolds of lower order than Clapeyau, then it actually turns out that this object here can be identified with this, okay, as an isomorphism, all right? And if you look at threefolds of higher order complexity than Clapeyau, then for general such T, it turns out that the image of this map is torsion. So Clapeyau, in the case of threefolds, and the case of M is zero, forms a special place in terms of cycle class map. Interesting examples. And you can see rather clearly from this situation here, why is, for example, I probably just got a little ahead to myself, why is, for example, C restricted to Y of T, okay, homologous to zero? Well, what you're doing here is when you restrict to Y of T, a hyperplane section, then L1 minus L2 becomes a difference of lines. And it's easy to check that a difference of two lines on such a threefold has to be homologous to zero by a Lefschetz theorem. So that's where you get the normal function coming in this place. But you can see that the lines on a Clapeyau play an important role, and quite generally, the image of this thing being infinite dimensional over Q has a lot to do with the existence of rational curves lying on a Clapeyau threefold. Okay, let me, because of time considerations, and as you can very well imagine, I'm moving a little quicker than I normally feel comfortable about, let me give you another example, and this is the case when M is 1. Maybe I'll go down here. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to assume that X is, first of all, a surface. And of course, eventually it will be a K3 surface. But for the moment, let's just refer to the surface here. In this case, M is going to be 1, and R is going to be 2. So in this case, we have a map. Of this form here, okay, and it's going to map into 2R minus M is going to be 4 minus 1 is going to be 3 of X G of 2, and so let me just write out exactly what we have here. So this is going to map to F2 intersect H3 of X G of 2. This is just a torsion subgroup, as I said. So this is the torsion subgroup we have here. The left-hand term, well, this is going to be J21 of X. So let me again remind you that this is the following. This is going to be H2 of XC modulo F2 H2 of XC. So that's going to be the holomorphic two forms. Plus H2 of X C of 2. Okay. Now, this is isomorphic to F1 H2 of X C all dual modulo H2 of X Z. So in other words, this is a dual space of the following. Take the holomorphic two forms on X, the 1-1 forms, take the dual of that, modulo H2 of X Z. Okay? And now let me do one more thing here before I finish describing this all. Let me just first of all say that there is a map, okay? So you have a map from the Lean cohomology here with integral coefficients to real Lean cohomology. Okay? And as I mentioned before, these are twisted real 1-1 classes. And this is isomorphic to itself. Okay, so there it is. Okay. So what is the map in this case? Well, suppose you have a class C. So let's write it in the form summation over alpha F alpha C alpha. Okay? Now what you have here is a Z alpha is a curve. And the F alpha belongs to the multiplicative part of the function field of Z alpha. Okay? And furthermore, you have that the summation over alpha divisors of the F alpha add up to zero. Okay? So now what I want to do here is assume that this is null homologous to zero. So in other words, the value in here, which is the torsion group, is zero. Of course, if X is K3, that's automatic, right? So then that means the group is all torsion. Okay, so what is the map? Perhaps we should explain that. Now, before I do this, I'm going to just say one more thing. There's a map to here, right? And this map going over to here, so let me just look at this is called a transcendental regulator. All right? So what does this map do? Well, you have the following. Think of F alpha, okay, by modification as a morphism to P1. Okay? They won't bother spelling everything out precisely. But now put gamma alpha here to be the inverse image of the negative real axis. And then put gamma to be the summation over alpha of the gamma alphas. All right? In this case, you can easily check that the boundary of gamma is precisely the summation over the alphas of the divisors of F alphas, which is zero. Okay? So you have this. In fact, what is this gamma? Gamma is actually this class here. By duality, it's just a one cycle. All right? And we're assuming it's zero. So in this case, gamma is homologous to zero. That implies that gamma is the boundary of some real two chain. So the map here is the following. You take omega lying inside here. Again, I'll assume an omega here. And so your Abel Jacobi mapping is essentially this. I always screw up on twists, so I'll try not to do that. 1 over 2 pi I times the summation over alpha, the integral of omega times log F alpha over Z alpha. Of course, you should remove the slit, right? I mean, you know, the gamma alpha lying inside of it. But let's not do that. Plus 2 pi I, the integral over zeta of omega. This is the membrane part. All right. This part here, the 2 pi's cancel out here, but this part here, see this? That's precisely the map here. That's the membrane integral. All right. So now, what would be the map here? Okay. What about the map going into the real Deligne cohomology here? What would that look like? Well, if you take the, call it Abel Jacobi R, okay, of C acting on omega, so omega in this case would be a real form, twisted, this would just be 1 over 2 pi I summation over alpha, the integral log modulus of F alpha times omega over Z alpha. That's what it is. It's called the real regulator. Okay. All right, let me just give you a few theorems, okay? Perhaps part verbally, because we're running out of time. First one, Hodge-D conjecture for K3s. This is due to my Shi Chen and myself. So if you look at the real Abel Jacobi map, tensor this with R, okay. This is surjective. For a general K3 surface. Now, general in this context does not mean very general. It means in a Zariski topology sense. So it's a nicer result. And so you take a moduli space, 19-dimensional moduli space, you're looking essentially at a real Zariski open subset. That's what we're talking about in this case. A member of that, and you'll have surjectivity. What's interesting about this is that if X is of lower order, okay, than a K3 surface, then this becomes completely algebraic. It's not very interesting. You're not involving transcendental classes. And this becomes a trivial surjective statement. Essentially, there's nothing to show. Okay, it's sort of like the Lefschetz 1-1 theorem. If X is of higher order than K3 and very general, it turns out this map is essentially trivial. So the K3 situation is important, and the key ingredient in the K3 situation is the existence of rational curves. You don't have too many, but you don't have too few. And the way you do this is that you look at a deformation where you specialize to a K3 surface that has maximal Picard rank, and where you can actually show this is surjective for trivial reasons, and then you try and use that deformation argument to propagate things for a general K3. Now here's something that's very surprising. The transcendental regulator is also non-trivial. Okay? In fact, here's the following theorem, which is proven by Shi Chen, myself, Chuck Dorn, and Matt Kerr. It's fresh off the press. We'll sell you a preliminary version for $100 each, or you can wait a year. So, the theorem is this. I want to pull it right. So just give me 3 minutes. It won't ruin your coffee, I hope. The theorem's worth it, though, for you. So here's the following theorem. So that X be a very general K3 surface. Okay? Then the transcendental regulator is non-trivial. And furthermore, quite generally, if X is a very general member of a general subvariety of dimension 20 minus L, okay, where L is less than 20. This is describing of K3 surfaces of Picard rank L with L less than 20, then likewise the transcendental regulator is non-trivial. Actually, there are other results. For instance, a recent paper of Shi Chen and I also show that for a very general K3 surface, the rational curves lying on that is a dense subset in the strong, the analytic topology. So anyway, these are results for Clavijau, and the one thing I never got a chance to talk about is the K2 situation, and here I was dealing with curves, and it turns out that the Clavijau in dimension 1 is an elliptic curve, and elliptic curves have plenty of torsion points, which are very much sort of analogous to rational curves in K3 surfaces. And it turns out that curves of higher order are just higher genus, and general curves of higher genus don't have torsion points. That's the Mumford-Mannon conjecture. But in fact, you can more or less prove the Mumford-Mannon conjecture by showing that the regulator, a so-called real regulator for general curves, for example, is trivial. And whereas the existence of torsion points for a Clavijau elliptic curve are essential to constructing non-trivial K2 classes. But I have no time to do this, so I'm just going to stop right now.
Eating the seat, so. in a given
that
family.
Is polarized.
Yeah.
That is polarized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it comes from the garbled
Actually, we don't. This is a, but we show that Picard Foods operator is non-trivial anyway. But the interesting thing about this is that the only thing in the literature which discusses this is the work by Stefan and Pedro, but in fact, that cycle is important.
It's wrong. In the case of hypercard rank, that's done in the context of the family. The family I talked about last time, the emperor.
Yeah. So 19 and now at least one. So once you have a normal form, and now that's why Q1.